Mike Bell, I just met Dominic at the bar. I looked up, and he had a Texas-Arizona State hat on. And I'm like, well, Texas-Arizona State? He goes, that was the first college game he went to, which was obviously college football playoff this year.
Right.
So Dominic's sitting over here with the white hat on.
Hey, man, what's up? Texas probably should have took that in the shorts. It was Quinn Ewers and those last-minute heroics.
So he said, I'd never been to a college football game. And he said, I ended up going. He says, but, man, my dad, his name is Mike, listens to you guys every day, and he told me that you guys are going to be here, so I want to come hang out with you. So, Dominic, man, appreciate you coming through today.
What's up, Dominator?
Appreciate it. But, yeah, he was just talking about college football, and then he wanted to know. He said, how was practice? And I know that's what you guys are wondering, right? How was practice?
Oh, it was great. We saw a guy's head knock completely off his body. Trainer had to come out and reattach it. That's how hard things were popping. Now, again, I heard Dave Archer this morning on the morning shift, and it was pretty funny because it does – you don't want to be that guy like, you know, get off my lawn. But if you're – I think you caught some of it in your pro career on the radio.
Yes.
But I'm old enough. First team I ever covered, because I've worked for a rock station, but I got to go watch the Dolphins, and that was two-a-days. And that was the first day of practice, full pads. I mean, none of this workup period, but this is all part of the new collective bargaining agreement. It's been in place for almost a decade and a half now, where guys ramp up. So when people wonder, why can't guys tackle in the NFL like they used to? I just don't think they have the kind of contact, Carl. And the level of pad practice in during the midweek, but certainly in preseason, you used to see back in the 90s.
I agree with you. Look, the NFL, when they went to this safety first mode, that's when things started to slowly change. And look, it feels like it's been 30 years, but
right.
It's not. In the last decade, the CTE thing and all the stuff and right. Mike, that the reports and, you know, oh, this is dangerous and we got to cut back on the amount of hitting and all of that stuff has played into how practice is done now. And I've said this to people. The NFL is as violent as it's ever been.
Right.
If you don't think it is, go down on the sideline on a Sunday and just watch.
Bigger and faster and stronger than ever.
If you ever get an opportunity. But the reality is, all the banging the guys, the old school guys, did every single day is the toll that they paid on their bodies. You're doing that in practice. You're doing it in games. You're doing it in 2 days. And so the NFL, this is where they're smart, and I have no issues with it. But, like, people think that the game is soft. Look, I got to say this. I don't think that if I'm running across the middle, Mike, and I'm defenseless, that you should be able to take my head off.
Right.
I don't, like, now knowing that as a kid, I was like, take his head off.
Right.
Knowing that now, I don't think you should be able to do that. That's smart. And if you're talking about these guys and the best entertainers in the world, it's entertainment, guys. I want to see the best stars on Sunday. I don't
right.
want to see the triple backup dude who has no name, value, or brand and is not as talented as the starters. So they're trying to save all these guys, and I say that to say I have no issues with how practice is done, but it is completely different than
right.
what we originally knew when we first got into
and
this
business. We've talked about this. When we were kids, order your Sports Illustrated subscription, get the helmet phone or the best hits of 1986.
Yes, yes.
You know, but again, taking it all the way back to the 70s, you know, Jack Tatum, Mel Blunt, those days, they just don't exist. Now, you can still lay the lumber, but now you got this hit zone, this target zone, if you will. You guys have to hit. So it is just kind of funny because I can remember my first Falcons practice, summer of 1998, yep, down the road, Carl, in Swanee, and literally maybe a dozen people watching the Falcons on the hill by McDonald's. It's just, whoa, I came from Miami. It was like 3,000 people watching practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the Smith family. They had the motel down there. And then obviously Arthur Blank and his stewardship and what we have today, where when you look up on the hill, that's what every training camp around the NFL is supposed to look like.
My first camp was the Cowboys mid-90s in college. They are coming off of Super Bowls. And for those who don't remember this, for a few years they used to train in Austin. Okay,
right.
So they went to California, and they went to San Antonio 1 year, and they went to Austin. Long story short, Mike, you showed up. 10,000-15,000 people there. Now it's Emmitt Smith, it's Michael Irvin, right? It's Troy Aikman.
Right.
I'm just like a newbie. I'm in college.
Right.
I'm trying to get into this thing, and I am wowed at one, the size. Guys like Nate Newton were on those teams, right? But two, the physical hitting. It was full go. Like,
right.
11 on 11 wasn't just let him catch the ball or defend the ball. It was, if he catches it, you punish him.
This is full pads, taped up, the whole shebang.
And
I
so,
mean, that's it.
To your point. And then, obviously, from there, you know, I covered Denver, the Broncos. Then I covered the Texans when they started in
but
early
remember,
2000s. All these camps have been different over the years, and it's just been amazing to see the evolution. But I totally agree with you. Here's what you're saying, though. Here's the bigger thing. As we're just talking about the NFL in general, guys, it's Dukes and Bell. How much the sport has grown.
Right.
Because when you see these camps now, and you're going to see it, like we talked about this with Steve Weiss, you're going to go, they're going to go around the country. Look at all the people that are at these camps, even the teams that have no shot.
Right.
Even the teams that their fans are like, we know we're not winning the Super Bowl this year, but they're showing up because the popularity of the sport has just grown. That's really what you're talking about. The Cowboys are an anomaly. They've always been popular.
Right.
But when you win a Super Bowl as a Cowboy, that's a different element. And I got a chance to, like, cover one of those camps or two of them. And so, I've seen what that can be, but it's been a long time. So I'm with you, man. The camp environment for football players is completely different. And I actually think it's good for these guys because it should prolong your career.
Right. Now, the good news, bad news is you're going to have a sloppy week one. You know, there's always a lot of, you know,
because you're not tackling.
Penalties, and there's a lot of some mistakes and things like that. But then you get into it. And, of course, since we've gone to this three-week preseason, a lot of coaches are still wrestling with it. You know, we talked about why in God's name would Zach Taylor have Joe Burrow out there for three preseason games, knowing his injury history the last three seasons. But he says that's his – I bet you he'll back off of that. But then we asked Michael Penix Jr. today, I go, how much are you going to be in preseason? He goes, couldn't really comment on it, didn't really know just yet. How much do you want to see Michael Penix Jr. out there? The reps, because he only had three games as a starter and one mop-up duty in Denver.
He didn't comment. You tried to press him on it a little bit. Not big, but just, hey, you know, and if he would have said, yeah, we talked already and I'm playing in every game, Mike and I would have been like, what? I think here's the question for me. What's appropriate? Is appropriate the first two series of each, the first two games? Because third game, you're not
risking. Third game, you're just setting your roster.
Right?
You're cutting guys.
But I say the word appropriate. Is appropriate, hey, he needs a little bit more work. Maybe he starts the first couple of series in the second game and maybe comes out in the second. Like, what is appropriate? And that's what I don't know from Ra or from Zach Robinson. What is the appropriate amount of work that makes you go, he's good, we're good, get him out of there?
Now, again, if we get a chance, I didn't get a chance. You were at the press conference. I was still in traffic when you were talking to Coach Ra today. I'd love to ask him, last year was the only one series for Michael Penix Jr. a byproduct of not wanting to tick off Kirk Cousins because he was in his feels over the draft pick?
Yeah.
Or is that how you're going to approach it now with Michael? I just thought that last year, I think we were all kind of surprised. I thought we were going to see a lot of Penix because, you know, he needs the reps and get, you know, NFL speed, et cetera. And this year, just to get him ready. So I don't want to be week two or three, and Michael Penix is, I don't think he's going to regress. I think we believe in him, what we saw those three games as a starter.
Yes.
But I still think there's something to be earned or gained. And look, if there's a blitz, just sit down. Do a Tom Brady. Okay, forget it. Take a knee. Don't get hit. I get it. But I just want to see this guy out there because I would think what everything means this year for the coaching staff, for the front office,
you
to keep
want to
their
feel
jobs.
Comfortable.
You got to feel this guy's ready to go, and that comes with reps.
Yeah, you want to feel comfortable. It's Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Another familiar face walking in here. Look at this. Guy's just popping up all over the place, man.
Give it up for and Michael McDonald wearing the sunglasses. I can't believe we're not in love anymore. I keep forgetting things will never be the same again. Yeah, so Michael McDonald in the house, ladies and gentlemen.
Come on, sing it. You guys know that song.
Come on now.
Y'all didn't know he was here?
Hey,
I just saw you on the Yacht Rock dock. It was great.
Cam Newton Jr. over there. What a fool believes.
Hey, man, 404-726-0929. Coming up, our interview with Michael Penix. Seriously, what did we think of practice? Let's talk about this for a second. Because as Leslie, I got to give Leslie a shout-out and her son. They came in earlier. I think they were eating.
She's an educator?
Yes, big listener. Her son literally was like, I get in the car. I said, after practice, she's got y'all on. And he's a big sports guy. He plays basketball.
I nominate her for Parent of the Year in Hall County.
Oh, my God. Like, she's like, I listen to you guys every day. And then her son and her are literally arguing about Kirk Cousins and stuff. So I'm like, okay, you guys do listen. But let me say this. As far as practice today, day one, it was good. I mean, like, this is a process, guys. But Penix looked on. The biggest thing we took from today, and we're going to get into this more at 5 o'clock, and we'll let you hear more of Kyle Pitts, is that they made an effort, Mike, to let everybody know we're throwing to Kyle Pitts
now,
today.
You and I always joke around because years ago when Crow and I first got together, I'm like, these teams, these players, they don't listen to talk radio or this and that. And now I realize Carl's right. They sponge up everything. They hear everything. So I was saying, we were all over the Kyle Pitts debate comes up like every other week because, as you said last year, he was an important cog in the machine, and
yes,
unfortunately, we didn't get the results. And then the defense, other things happened. Kirk Cousins imploded. But this year, to hear that from your quarterback, first thing he says, hey, we got the ball in KP's hands. So he's acutely aware of the criticism of Kyle Pitts. The team is acutely aware. And then we're also in this strange sort of crossroads because I would think win, boom, or bust, Kyle Pitts won't be here next year. I can't see us spending the kind of money the top-level tight ends and his agent are going to ask for if, for argument's sake, he gives you two Pro Bowl-caliber seasons out of five.
Even if he balls out and we go to deep in the playoffs?
I mean, if he balls...
Come on now.
But then, but you need to have money for...
Come on now, Mike, he's young.
No,
you still
got to
pay... Garrett Wilson got paid.
Again.
You got to get paid for... You got to pay Drake, right? Drake London's got to get paid.
Okay, his money's there.
Bijan's got to get paid.
His money will be there.
Okay. Eventually, you're going to have to pay everybody else.
I am unlike you right now, who after day one is like, I don't see him here next year.
I don't think he'll be here. I don't
unlike
care if he's
you,
better than Travis Kelce. I'm still not paying him $100 million.
Well, he's not going to get $100 million. But
well, he's going to get top money tight end loot.
He is. But unlike you, I'm willing to at least allow Pitts to show us he can play.
Well, then maybe Pitts, maybe Kyle could specify what was the nature of the injury that kept him out of mandatory minicamp.
He's not going to do that.
Because that was, if you missed the start of the show, when Kyle Pitts came to the media scrum, where all the, you know, the TV and radio and everybody else is, the first question is, what exactly was the nature of that foot injury?
None of your business.
Oh, you know, it was a thing, and banged up foot. And a
he wouldn't say.
You know, and then,
none of your business.
And then when people pressed him, you got to ask the trainers. I'm asking you. It's your freaking foot. I mean, that's why I'm just like, it just aggravates me, and I know it shouldn't, but you and I, don't be honest now, don't lie. We looked at each other and raised our eyebrows like,
well,
what the hell?
Because when I asked you guys way back when he wasn't playing in OTAs and mandatory minicamp, and they were like, well, the severity of the injury, we're being very precautious.
Yes.
And I'm like, well, what's the injury? And nobody wanted to say. So now fast forward to the start of training camp, and you're like, hey, you're 100%. What's the injury? I'm not saying. What's going on?
So
that's all. I'm with you.
He looked 100% today. We talked about a couple of cool. Again, this is they are 11-on-11.
But he didn't want to divulge that.
They're going full speed. It's not three-quarter speed. They're not wearing pads. But there were football plays being made. There were a lot of defensive grabs because some of the throws were underthrown. A few. There was also some great throws to Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts had two big throws and catches today.
All right, guys, we got plenty more to talk about, plenty more to get to here on the show. It's Dukes and Bell live from Hooters, and again,
Hooters.
It's Mall of Georgia location. Our interview with Michael Penix coming up. But right now, let's give you a chance to win that family four-pack to the Premier League Summer Soccer Series. 404-726-0929. Caller 5, Big O, back at the studio. As that match is going to happen August 3rd at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Tickets are provided by Premier Soccer League. Tickets on sale at Ticketmaster.com. Caller 5 right now just for listening to Dukes and Bell. All right, we're coming back. If you did not hear today, big news in the sports world. We lost an iconic figure. We'll get to that as well here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Dukes and Bell. I am looking at this from college football. And On3, our buddy Rusty Manziel works for On3 and does stuff as well. But President Trump apparently signed an executive order today that's going to prohibit third-party pay-for-play payments and directs the Secretary of Labor and the National Labor Relations Board to clarify that athletes are amateurs and not employees.
Oh, snap.
So,
but the judge already made the ruling. So well, how does this fall legally?
This is the question. So the NCAA and Power Five leaders have long pursued congressional action on Capitol Hill, most recently with the SCORE Act, and this goes back a few years when they were like, hey, we need clarity, we need help. But the executive order prohibits third-party pay-for-play payments but does not apply to legitimate fair market value compensation that a third party provides for an athlete.
But isn't it now you're getting paid directly by the university?
You are.
There's no more collective, technically.
So this is the third party. This is not the university.
Right.
This is... would be that collective, Mike, that we're talking about.
And it's a little confusing for the audience, but okay, all right.
It is. So
I thought we kind of bridged that gap. I know there's still some questions after the House versus NCAA settlement, but
that's what I thought.
I thought we were already down this road. It's basically the way the listeners, I think most fans figure, $20 million is a salary cap per team.
Yep.
And that's what we're working off. So when you hear all these big money contracts, you know, with the Longhorns, for instance, that's going against their cap, for lack of a better word.
And I think
it's going to make, you know, you got to cover 80 guys or 85 guys with
that
money.
And for those who don't remember, Saban went and met with the president.
Right.
I mean, there have been numerous college coaches who have said, hey, you know, you need to look into this. Again, an executive order is not congressional, or you've passed a law, Mike, through Congress to say this is now the law of the land. But nevertheless, it's a start. So anyways, that's just out there. I'm mentioning it because as we talk college football as well, and we'll get to the college season here, before you know it, dogs will be working out. All the schools will be getting ready for the season. But it is interesting to see now that this executive order has been signed.
And it's funny because everybody's talking about the big money, you know, the best linebacker, best running back going to the Texas Longhorns, presumably for millions of dollars.
Hook 'em.
Georgia losing out on a top lineman from Ohio who goes to the University of Miami potentially for an extra $500,000, if you believe the reports. And then we find out today from the On3 people that Jared Curtis is expected to make north of $750,000 in his freshman season. Now, he won't start. Gunnar Stockton's going to be here. But I got to be honest, based on Jared Curtis's five-star rating, that's well below the perceived market value, but I do think it plays into what Kirby was selling at SEC Media Days, that they're trying to find that balance between not just pure, you know, play for pay and guys that actually want to develop and grow in a program.
I agree. Kirby said it so clearly. It's not the money. He said it. I don't care about that. Like, I don't have any problems with that. The problem that Kirby has stated that he has is, again, one, allowing kids to come in, you make this commitment to leave, and then they can leave again. And he's like, I'm trying to build my team and set my roster. Guys, eventually, and this is another thing the Big Ten and the SEC are going to come to an agreement on, one portal date. That's it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think
one portal
date. It's gotten to the point where it's gotten silly.
And the SEC, right, wants it earlier. The Big Ten wants it later. They want it in April. SEC's like, let's do it in January. This has been another argument, but they're going to come together. Once they decide about this playoff right. thing, that is something else that's going to change, and I think it's going to help college football because, Mike, this two portal, I shouldn't be worried about my team, and I'm in season, and you got guys already talking about what they want out, and they're transferring. I'm trying to keep my team together, and I got to worry about whether I'm going to bring in new guys. It's too much.
Well, I mean, then you had your spring game, and you lose 10 guys off your spring team.
That's right.
That's why I agree with, again, the SEC has it right. The Big Ten, though, as we said, this power play, this sort of struggle of, like, it's like Cold War. It's like, we'll say that the SEC is the good guys, we're the USA, and the Big Ten are the Ruskies, but it is like this power play and this power dynamic, and who are the proxies? How does the Big 12 and the ACC feel about this, and who's got our back? It's pretty interesting. Kirby, according to CBS Sports, they do the SEC coach rankings. Again, this is subjective, but I think we'd agree that he is the number one coach. Steve Sarkisian comes at two.
Okay.
And then hot seat Brian Kelly, me and my
family.
He comes in third. I'd buy that.
I do too. I just feel like the first two, look, Sark doesn't have to win a chip this year. He should.
Yeah.
No. They could get to the college football national championship game and lose. And it would be a step further than where they were last year, okay? And then you go, well, Arch is back, and look at what we got back, and you build it, and they say he's okay. They're not going to fire Sark if he gets to the national championship game. Kirby's fine. Brian Kelly doesn't make the playoffs? I think he's done.
You realize, I said this the other day, it's funny, after practice today, we were talking to A.J. Terrell off mic, because he's a big Clemson guy, and I had a Seminole hat, he's breaking my chops, but I was talking about, we're going to find out who the real Death Valley is with LSU going into South Carolina in Clemson. And it is interesting because Brian Kelly has never won the opening game as head coach of LSU. They lost to Florida State twice, and they lost to USC. So he's never won week one, which is interesting. And needless to say, you know how it is for fans. Yes, you can lose early and still be in the mix.
Yeah.
But as a fan, it just takes all the wind right out of your sails.
Well, there's already, like, this belief that he should be winning more games with the amount of talent that's there. And for those who don't know this, too, we're talking college football. You know, Brian Kelly came out of his own pocket $1 million for NIL. For his own team.
Right.
He was like, here's an extra meal. Like, he understands that he's got to get it done. But, yeah, Mike, I just feel like it adds that extra pressure.
Coaches on the hot seat kind of famously have to put a little extra in a little less in the envelope. Mike Norvell gave some money to one of the foundations to help do the same thing.
Well,
when you realize which way the wind's blowing, you've got to give a little back.
I'll say this, though. You know, again, and make as much money as you can, right? That's great. But if some of these coaches are making – $10, $11, $12 million.
To whom much is given?
Yeah, much is there's much responsibility.
Yeah, much is expected.
So I don't have an issue with it either, but that is not the norm. Guys, teams and coaches are not coming out of their pocket. It just tells you, for me, Brian Kelly, he understands the circumstances.
Hey, when we see Bijan Robinson next practice, we gotta get on his case. You gotta tell him, hey man, knock off this Texas stuff. Bijan Robinson reportedly becoming a closer for the Texas Longhorns.
Well, why wouldn't he?
Trying to give tips to some of these recruits has been pretty cool, says Bijan. Look, Bijan's the most dynamic personality. By the way, how good did he look today? It's kind of funny. Guys were asking us who looked good at practice. We should have started with, oh, and by the way, Bijan looks like he's ready for the season, because he is just, it's effortless. And yes, there are plays that might have been whistled at via tackle, but for the most part, anytime Bijan touched it, and Tyler Allgeier, they were making moves.
Yeah.
Down the field.
I don't know, Mike. Maybe I'm skewed. He's dynamic. And I feel like you guys know this. And like, if I told you, wow, he made a move today and he juked three guys at one time. And if it was a live play, it would have not only been a first down, it would have been good for 25 to 30 yards.
It would have been on SportsCenter.
Right? And if I said that to you, you'd be like, all right, I believe it. Because you've seen enough of Bijan to like go, dude, he's so dynamic. When you make a crowd in a practice go,
ooh, right,
that's special.
And that's the kind of stuff he was doing. And we got to be honest, we said Kyle Pitts, we talked about it earlier, he was also having a really good day today because there was a concerted effort to get the ball in his hands. One last college note, Mack Brown doing an interview, I guess it was up at ACC, but anyway, he's talking somewhere about Vince Young.
They should have never fired me.
They made a mistake. And by the way, did you see the media scrum around Belichick today?
What he say is the question.
50,000 people around Belichick for him to mumble through.
Very excited. Difficult schedule.
Did they ask about the girlfriend?
What's that?
The girlfriend.
That's off limits of talking about.
Is she here? Is she in the building?
Time out. Who of those khaki pants, milk toast, white bread with mayonnaise, ACC media type is going to ask anything about that?
Is she blowing the horn for the segment of practice?
Next question. Next question. Looking forward to next season.
No, so Belichick.
It's a topic neither one of them is comfortable commenting on.
So Belichick literally had the biggest crowd, said nothing. People were saying it's wild. They said, wow, even Krzyzewski doesn't get that many people in the old days, you know, at Duke, or Roy Williams at North Carolina, you know, at ACC Hoops days. But Vince, getting back to Mack Brown, asked about comparisons of Arch Manning, saying he reminds him of Vince Young, saying he's kind of self-deprecating, but I like it. He's a whole lot like Vince at the same age. Look, say what you want about Vince's disastrous pro career. He was one of the most, if not the, well, he won the Heisman, the most dynamic player in college.
Hands down. Vince Young was a dude, man. Like, again.
The USC game?
He's one of these guys that, again, when you start talking about this college career, go look at what he was able to do. And if you're comparing Arch from an attitude standpoint, because they're different athletes. They're different dudes.
Right.
But that's great. By the way, real quick about LSU, and we'll come back. Mike's got guy talk on the way. We'll talk about one iconic player or person that was lost today. The only win I see on LSU's schedule is when they play Alabama. That's it. Clemson, loss. Florida, L. Ohio,
wow.
Ole Miss,
wow.
Loss.
You're going in. LSU's going to go 1-11?
Ole Miss, they're going to lose. I'm talking LSU. Look, the first 6 weeks of the season, the only win I see LSU is Alabama. Hi.
Jerome. Why do you hate Alabama so
no,
much?
No, look, I'm joking. Seriously, though, Mike, Clemson, I've said this. Florida in the first 3 weeks, you could be 1-2 after beating La Tech. Then you get Southeastern Louisiana. Okay, you're 2-2 if you're LSU. And then you have to play at Ole Miss.
But
you
Ole Miss
be 2-3.
Ole Miss is recharging the batteries, but all right, I'm with you. Lane will have them ready.
Up front they are. Their quarterback is legit.
Right, but they always have the transfer portal thing down. That's one thing Lane has mastered.
Yeah, but I do think they should beat Ole Miss, but on the road we know how that can be. I'm just telling you, Louisiana State fans, you guys, we could be looking by October 11th against South Carolina. You could know what this season looks
like. Wow. They're going to have to basically cancel elementary schools in Louisiana to pay for the buyout of Brian Kelly. We know how that works in the state of Louisiana. But the thing about Clemson, we were talking, as we said, off the air with AJ, and he's got a brother up there. But you know, the defense is amazing. They've got, as you said, the best defensive front. We've got a quarterback in Kate Klubnik, who's, this is it. I mean, you said had statistically an amazing year. I thought that the last couple of years, the coaching staff has gone through some learning curve. But, man, Clemson, everyone's kind of sleeping now. They're the best team in the ACC, hands down. But you penciling Clemson into the Final Four?
I am.
I think this is a monster year for Dabo. I think Dabo, you know, he had to hear for 2 years. You know, it's the nature of sports and journalism and the way social media works. Programs and coaches get built up and then just cut them off at the knees as soon as they show some degree of dropping back a bit. But I think this is it. And also for Clemson, this is the culmination of guys sticking around. You know, we talked about with Ohio State and Michigan. This is the same thing for Clemson this year, bro. They got to get it done.
No, they do. Hey, man, when we come back, we got some guy talk, Mike Bell.
Let me tell you something, brother. All you little Hulksters out there, you better say your prayers or take your vitamins. An iconic wrestler, a guy that transcended pop culture. We'll talk about the passing of Hulk Hogan in Guy Talk. Also coming up, those of us, Carl, who will always remember the great one-side-of-the-street blackout of the Mall of Georgia in 2025 and how we overcame it today at Hooters. Live from Hooters Mall of Georgia in Buford, it's Dukes and Bell. We are live. Our residency begins for the summer of 2025, our fifth year, Carl, doing Falcons Camp and then hanging out at Hooters. Hooters, y'all. Hooters.
Come on, put your hands together. Come on.
Yes.
We're having a good time out here. There's money being bet illegally over here. Everybody's over here having a good time. This is good.
Our Falcons crew is continuing to work. Lil Cam Newton, apparently there's hugging, so there were some harsh words exchanged.
You know what that means. No, it means Jerome paid up is what that means.
But apparently there is respect, although Jerome continues to mouth off over there. Jerome wants to bet me about the Florida State game. I said, you're going to give me 24 points? Because that's what I need on this one.
Oh, he tried to get you on that game?
Well, he wants me to take some. I thought, we're going to get our butts whooped. What are you talking about?
You don't want to bet him on that?
No way, Jose.
You guys are going to cover the what, 14?
13 and a half right now. Give me 10 more, and we got ourselves a bet, okay? I have no illusions about – you know me.
You know Alabama's not going to run the score.
I just had a custom-made Florida State shirt here that says, I'm just here for the party.
Okay.
Because that's basically where it's at this stage. Anyway, we're live at Hooters, guys, Mall of Georgia. Before we get to the big news story of the day, tell you about our day here at Hooters. We got here, as usual, about 12:30, 1 o'clock after Falcons camp. And if you miss Michael Penix Jr., hear our conversation with him coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, 5:20, right, boss?
That is correct.
But we come into Hooters, and there's a sign on the door that says, hey, sorry, power is out. We're closed. And we had our guy Low Country, who's a popular Falcons fan, a podcaster, our regular group of guys over here that were at Falcons practice. And we're just sitting out there, and I said, well, heck, let's just go inside and see what we can get. So we go in, figure the ice is cold.
So y'all just crashed the party.
Basically just crashed the party, you know. And we just kind of took over Hooters, and the manager was very accommodating, had a couple of cocktails. Then more people came in and said, we really can't be doing this. So that's why there was a degree of confusion. But we will rebuild the great power outage of 2025. And it was only one side of the street. The mall was fine. We don't know if some old lady hit a transformer or whatever.
It's crazy. And
did I do that in my Buick?
Did
I don't know.
Did I do that? No,
yeah, I'm sorry, I did more of an Urkel there than an old lady. But we did have a great time earlier today. Now, crowd's rolling in. So if you're in your car, we'll be here till 6 on Dukes and Bell. And we'll be here again Tuesday, next Thursday, Hooters Mall of Georgia. American wrestling and pop culture icon Hulk Hogan passes away today at the age of 71. There were some conflicting reports down in Tampa Bay about just how bad his health was the last few weeks. His on-again, off-again friend, Bubba the Love Sponge, radio host and Sirius star, had said a few weeks ago that he was in bad health, that he was in ICU. His wife denied that he was in that bad of shape. He did apparently have a neck fusion surgery a couple of weeks ago, pretty common for guys that have dealt with wrestling injuries. But unfortunately today, about 11 a.m., calls to his house, unresponsive. They're calling it a cardiac arrest. Paramedics tried for over an hour, could not revive him. And the Clearwater police say there's nothing suspicious, or just simply a heart attack.
Vivid memories, even if you're not a wrestling fan, of Hulk Hogan. And Mike and I always talk about this. For me, we can argue about which favorite Rocky is your favorite Rocky, but Rocky III, I absolutely love, with Clubber Lang. And in that movie where he is in an exhibition with Rocky, right? And for a lot of people, it was like maybe the first time. And you're going back, this is what, mid-80s, Mike?
And it ticked off Vince McMahon that he did it. He actually left WWF to go to AWA for a while. But, yeah, that was him as a Thunder Lips.
Correct.
The wrestler.
And it was like, what is this? And you got a sense of what kind of entertainer he was. And obviously he's blowing up with WWE at that time, and he's champ and all that stuff. But I just think, Mike, and whether you're a wrestling fan or not, he was iconic for so many different reasons. And to your point about the movies and doing the movies and all that, I just didn't know that if he had been sick, nobody had really said anything. I got to tell you, Ric Flair is posting like crazy about his friend.
And let's hear from Ric Flair. Here's what we got off of TMZ Sports. Take a listen.
People always wanted to paint us as enemies, but we were actually very very close friends. And we kept up with each other on a regular basis. So I just talked to Jimmy Hart yesterday, and he was fine. To have this happen is just horrible.
That's Ric Flair. They go, obviously, way back. And I feel like, you know, you're going to see, as you already have, the wrestling world react. But also just people, you know, again, I've said this earlier, politics aside, I like to, you know, I'm not going to talk bad about Hulk Hogan. He's not here. But politics aside, I don't think it's undeniable, Mike, the effect he had on growing wrestling into whatever it is now, whatever you think it is. There was a time this was a regional thing, and, you know, Mike, it wasn't what you think it is now on Netflix, and it's a billion-dollar business.
He was with WWF. He did the Rocky movie. Vince McMahon had a falling out. AWA comes back, and that's when wrestling explodes. And, of course, remember the Iron Sheik, the first WrestleMania.
That's right.
Subsequently, again, all talked about in that Vince McMahon bio that was pretty amazing, that documentary. Born Terry Jean Bollea in Augusta, Georgia. His family moved down to Florida. He played in bands, worked as a dock worker, a stevedore, if you will, Carl, in the Back Bay of Tampa Bay before eventually getting a shot at wrestling. And as you said, man, just, you know, everything from the movies and TV and just, you know, let me tell you something, brother. Just that's a part of so many people's childhood. We talked about being, if you're of a certain age, between Ozzy Osbourne and Hulk Hogan, that's a lot of pages out of your childhood playbook, isn't it?
So, yeah, and let's not forget, you know, Malcolm Jamal Warner, who passed away this week as well. You've had some iconic people pass away, whether it was, again, TV shows, the wrestling aspect, the music industry. It's been an interesting week, to say the least. But listen, I feel like, Mike, it just makes you appreciate a little bit more the time we got with those people and
right
certainly how they entertained us.
Right on. Hey, man, switching gears. We were talking earlier, some guys at the bar, they heard my rant yesterday about Juniper Street being taken down to two lanes.
Yeah, I heard it too. You don't care about pedestrians or bicyclists.
Well, I've got a very, very, very bullying text message from a resident who reminded me that one of the members of the city council got hit on his bike. Some idiot made an illegal U-turn with a U-Haul in and took out the city councilman, who's vying for, obviously, more green space and more safe space for bicyclists. But here's something we can all enjoy, regardless of how stupid the city's idea was to shut down Juniper to two lanes. At the Tour de France, say it with me, the Tour de France.
Tour de France.
Somebody tried to do their own version of Rosie Ruiz. For those who don't remember, she was the woman who said she won the Boston Marathon by starting the race, jumping on the Boston mass transit system.
Liar.
And then getting to the finish line. And then later they figured out that nothing made sense. Some dude had a bicycle hidden by the finish line at this latest, I guess, leg of the Tour de France. And then he hops over with a number on his back, gets on the bike, and tries to finish the last 100 yards to cross the finish line. If not for the quick thinking of a member of security who lays this guy out and drops him like first period French. So this is great. The first security guy misses him. The second guy wearing a flak jacket. This guy could be a linebacker in the NFL. Later reports say he was a former member, Carl, of the French Foreign Legion. Now a member of local law enforcement. Oh, the gendarmerie. So, yes, always fun to watch a person on a bicycle who's not supposed to be in a race knocked on his keister. By the way, am I the only person who watches the Tour de France for the giant wrecks? Is that wrong? Like those Talladega style where they all go, and like all of a sudden like 20 guys in the goofy outfits are all just like, writhing around like soccer players.
The domino
effect. Like, you know, spokes are going through their shins. Is that wrong?
No. We all watch for the wrecks, don't we?
Maybe me.
Okay,
just me.
Okay.
But anyway, but yes,
Did you get a letter from the city is my question.
No, I had some Midtown hipsters, of which I once was one, because Carl used to make fun of me when I used to say, oh, you people in the suburbs, in your gated communities, keeping up with the Joneses with your yards. Okay, that's me now. But, you know, I lived in the city for 11 years. I walked to work for 7 years. You know, you and I working together.
Yeah.
So I understand the importance. I never felt like I wasn't safe on a friggin' sidewalk.
But Mike,
I don't know who these people are that need an entire lane to do that or run. The bike thing is different,
but
still.
Wait a minute. There were numerous times you came in and said you had almost been hit on Peachtree.
No, because I almost said a bad word. The jacklegs on the scooters. The scooter people.
Oh.
The scooter people are the problem. First off, you got some, let's be honest, like, hey, we're just came. Me and Barbara came in from Arkansas. We're staying downtown at the W. Going to take the scooter over there to the aquarium. And then, pow, you know he's going to face plant. Next thing you know, you got 245 pounds of fat, gooey Arkansas right there on the sidewalk.
Yeah. Okay. I just wondered if the city hit you up. After, no. That was a violent rant you went on.
No,
yesterday.
I'm just saying, the same pretentious people when I lived in Midtown, why can't we use the pool? You have to be 6 feet apart during COVID. I sleep in the same bed with my wife. Why do I need to be 6 feet apart? So these same people that are just very pain in the arse are the same people that want their green space and they want their bicycle lanes in Midtown.
I'm all for our city being beautiful, Mike.
Yes, I'm all for the two major southern... You know what? Are we going to do this on Spring Street? Are we going to turn Spring Street into two lanes? No. Yeah, exactly. Stupidity by the city. Take your bicycle and do it on the weekend.
We have up more trees than any other city in the country, yes. Mike. It's beautiful.
Yeah, go ride, do circles in Piedmont Park. For crying out loud. You know, and your stupid Peloton. Am I right? This guy hates bicyclists more than I do. I'm sorry the city councilman was on his bike and his daughter is, so daughter is safe, but obviously scary moment. Bicyclists, they have rights, Carl.
They do.
Not during rush hour. Get your bike off the street. On that note, that is Guy Talking. These opinions are not necessarily those of Hooters or the management of 92.9 The Game.
A lot of people agreed with you, though, I must say. A lot of people hit me up yesterday. You know your boy Bell was right. I was like, wow, you guys.
When's the last time you rode a bike?
Who, me?
Yeah.
The beach.
Because you got driving lessons. That's why you don't ride a bike. I have a freaking thing. It's called
the beach.
Car.
The last time I rode a bike was the beach, and I almost got killed down.
Yes,
there.
And I won't even ride a bike. Like, I rode motorcycles for years. I won't ride a motorcycle, let alone a bike. I'm just saying, you can't assume that anyone's going to be looking out for you on a bicycle. Because they don't even see motorcycles. We have the autonomous vehicles. That's another thing. And that's why the guy I was arguing with, he goes, on his bio page on Twitter, big fan of autonomous vehicles. Oh, really? Don't know how to shift? Sorry.
Those Wayfair cars, or what are they called? Waymo? Waymo?
Can you get one at Wayfair?
I said that last time, didn't I? Yeah, I don't know why I've got Wayfair.
Yeah, but Waymo,
mind.
The Waymo.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, the battle of
Wayfair, Waymo, it's all the
same. But you know what really drove me crazy? The guy that I was arguing with on Twitter yesterday, he goes, well, the suburban mindset doesn't... I was a freaking city resident. I paid city taxes for 10 years. Where do you think I got the hell out of there? I mean, you got to find a balance, Carl. A balance. Common sense.
You know what? I agree with you. And I just want a beautiful city, Mike.
Yeah, you
it's
know
It's Dukes and Bell.
What
Sports
are we going to do?
Sports Radio 92.9
Not everybody who lives in the city works in the city. Not everybody's lucky enough to walk or take a bike to work. That's the point.
You should be able to walk to Piedmont Park without being impeded.
You know what? We talked about this years ago. It might be time for me to move back to the city and run for mayor.
Oh, now you know what? Now we're talking.
Mike Bell, a troubled man for troubled times. I'll fix MARTA.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll fix MARTA.
What are you going to do? You're going to come in and doge it?
No, we're going to turn... You know what we're going to do?
What are you going to do?
We're going to scrap all the trains. We're going to turn that into a giant bike path.
Okay. All right.
How's that sound? I just fixed MARTA.
Hey, man. We're talking Falcons. Coming up, our conversation with Michael Penix, our quarterback, as he stopped by today, first day of camp. We'll tell you all the things about practice and who spoke today, including Kyle Pitts. And look, you know we've got our doubts.
Kind of Kyle Pitts was front and center today.
Front and center. It was almost like, let's show him, right? I got a little sense of that today.
Well, it sounds like QB1 is in TE1's back. He's got his back.
No, he does. He does. All right, we're going to get to that and much more coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. We're live at Hooters. Hey, if you're here, give yourself a round of applause. You guys stop gambling over there. Round of applause if you hang out at Hooters with us. All
right. That's right.
We're coming back. It's Dukes and Bell.